Varna Ashrama Acharavata. Who behaves according to the system of the four divisions of social order and four divisions of spiritual life. Purushena, by a man. Paraha, the supreme. Puman, person. Vishnu, Lord Vishnu. Arajyate, is worshipped. Panta, way. Na, not. Anyat, another. Tattoshakaranam, cause of satisfying the Lord. So translation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, is worshipped by the proper execution of prescribed duties in the system of Varna and Ashram. There is no other way to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One must be situated in the institution of the four Varnas and Ashrams. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. This is a quotation from the Vishnu Purana 3.8.9, as stated by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Amrita Pravaha Bhasha. The purport is that one can realize life's perfection simply by satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is also confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 2nd Chapter, Text 13. Atak pumbir dvija shrishta varnashrama vibhagashaha asvanustitasya dharmasya samsidhir haritoshanam. O best among the twice born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties prescribed for one's own occupation according to caste divisions and orders of life is to please the Personality of Godhead. Every man should perform his occupational duty in the light of his particular tendency. According to his abilities, one should accept a position in the Varnashrama institution. The divisions of Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra are natural divisions within society. Indeed, everyone has a prescribed duty according to the Varnashram Dharma. Those who properly execute their prescribed duties live peacefully and are not disturbed by material conditions. The spiritual orders, Brahmacharya, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas, are called ashramas. If one executes his prescribed duty in both the social and spiritual orders, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is satisfied. If one neglects his duties, however, he becomes a transgressor and a candidate for a hellish condition. Actually, we see that different people are engaged in different ways. Therefore, there must be divisions according to work. To attain perfection, one must make devotional service the center of life. In this way, one can awaken his natural instincts by work, association, and education. One should accept the Varnashrama divisions by qualification, not by birth. Unless this system is introduced, human activities cannot be systematically executed. The Brahmanas are the intellectuals who can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are always engaged in the cultivation of knowledge. It does not matter whether one is born in India or outside India. Those who are naturally very heroic and who tend to rule over others are called kshatriyas. Those who tend to produce food by agricultural methods, protect cows and other animals, and engage in trade are called vaishyas, or merchants. Those who are not sufficiently intelligent to be brahmanas, kshatriyas, or vaishyas are required to serve a master and are called shudras. Thus everyone can engage in the service of the Lord and awaken his natural Krishna consciousness. If a society does not function according to such natural divisions, the social orders become degraded. The conclusion is that the scientific method of Varnashram Dharma should be adopted by society. So, Varnashram Acharavato Purushena Parapuman Vishnura Rajate Panta Nanyatatosha Karanam. So, Om Gana Timurandasha Gdanjana Shvakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, actually, this is quite an important verse, and it occurs in the section of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita known as the Ramananda Samvada. That means the instructions by Sripad Ramanujacharya, not Ramanujacharya, Ramananda Roy, sorry. Ramananda Roy. So, Srila Prabhupada has actually written a book called the Ramananda Samvada, which I don't know if any of you have seen a copy of. It's available on the Veda base, or the Bhaktivedanta Veda base. And you read it. It's about this elaborate conversation with Srila Prabhupada's commentary between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy. So, Lord Chaitanya is taking the position of a student, and he is asking Ramananda Roy questions about what is the highest goal or methodology to reach the highest goal in life. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu keeps correcting Ramananda Roy, not exactly correcting him, but pointing in a different direction, saying, first of all, with this Varnashram explanation, he says, this is simply external, so go higher. And then Ramananda Roy points out, well, renunciation of one's duties or taking sannyas basically is higher, and then Lord Chaitanya says, go higher and higher and higher and higher. So this is very much reminiscent of Sukadeva Goswami's conversation with Maharaj Parikshit in the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Maharaj Parikshit asked Sukadeva Goswami, after hearing about all the hells in the fifth canto — I think many of you read the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it has a description, an elaborate description of like millions and millions of hells that the living entity can be subjected to, like being thrown off a cliff and having to walk up the cliff again, or being walking on a red-hot surface or white-hot surface of a planet, or embracing the red-hot form of the opposite sex, and continually doing this over a long period of time. So Parikshit Maharaj, instead of gloating about how the living entities are suffering, because Parikshit Maharaj is a merciful Vaishnava, he is thinking, how can these living entities be relieved from the suffering? Like, we can tell the difference between a neophyte devotee and a devotee who has compassion, because a neophyte devotee, when he hears about people suffering, he thinks, oh, so interesting, let the Yamadutas get them, right? And sometimes even we may, or someone may curse someone else, saying, oh, I hope you're tortured by the Yamadutas for what you did to me. Isn't the vengeance? Of course, the real Brahman is always forgiving. So in any case, Parikshit Maharaj, he is thinking how to free these living entities from the suffering. And so he asked Sukadeva Goswami how to free the living entities from these different hells, or from the potential of going to the different hells. And Sukadeva Goswami replies by the process of prayaschitta. Prayaschitta means atonement. In other words, let's take it in a Christian context. In the Christian context, or in a Catholic context, you have this confession that you go out and you sin, and then you go to the priest, and he is seated in a what's called a confessional booth, and you tell the priest, I have done this. And the priest says, you're forgiven. And next week you show up again. And you say, I've done this, you're forgiven. And so it goes on and on, you know, you're forgiven, you're forgiven. So that's Catholic religion. In the Jewish religion, they have a day of atonement a year. those of you, anyone from that background? Of course, Vlad Nandamarsh, so he knows what I'm talking about. It's called Yom Kippur. So, which is one day you're supposed to fast. You know, that's, I guess they couldn't handle it every 2 weeks of Kaddisi. It's too much for this particular religion. So one day, like half a day or a whole day you fast, and you just say, please forgive me, God, for what I did. Please forgive me, God, for what I did. And then hopefully God forgives you, and then you go on the next year, and then you come back, please forgive me. So, yeah, even, I don't know if I should mention this, even there was one film many, many years ago, it's called Never on Sunday. It's about a lady who engaged in a particular occupation. It's not so nice. But on Sunday she was religious. You know, very pious on Sunday. It's like you see in some Catholic countries, even the prostitutes that go to church on Sunday. So, that's like atonement. You do something, if any of you have seen that film, Da Vinci Code, where people engage in flagellation, you know, oh, I'm so sinful. You know, you beat yourself with a chain or something like that, and you bleed, or the hair shirts with the priest. So, the problem with that system of atonement is it doesn't purify the papa vijam. That means a sinful desire seat in the heart. And so, when Parikshit Maharaj was presented with this answer by Shukadev Goswami, Parikshit Maharaj actually rejected the answer given by his guru, which is interesting. It also proves, like Prabhupada said in the Bhagavad Gita, that a devotee shouldn't be a blind follower. A devotee should actually be able to question the guru, because the guru may be testing someone sometimes. And in this case, Jai Shishi Panchatattva, in this case, Shukadev Goswami was testing Maharaj Parikshit. I remember one time when devotee was tested by Prabhupada, not in a similar way, you know, this was in an ashram way. One devotee went to Prabhupada and said, I want to take sannyas, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, I think you should get married. And so a few days later, the devotee came back with his fiance and asked for Prabhupada's blessings. So it really happened like that. And so that was a test. So Parikshit Maharaj was being tested, and he passed the test by rejecting what Shukadeva Goswami had said. He said, you know, this is like a kundra sochara, like an elephant bathing. You know, the elephant bathes, then he rubs dirt on himself after he bathes, so he's getting dirty again. Of course, there is a purpose why the elephant rubs dirt on himself, but I'm not going to get into this description of elephant life for you, because it's not appropriate for a class. So so the guru can test the disciple in such a way. In the same way, and the disciple can test the guru. In the same way, you have Lord Chaitanya acting as a disciple or asking questions in a rhetorical way, actually, from Ramananda Roy. And Lord Chaitanya keeps saying, go higher, or even rejecting certain things that Ramananda Roy is saying. So this is a very interesting exchange between Lord Chaitanya, the Supreme Lord, and his devotee. Of course, Ramananda Roy, his ontological position, that means who he is in the spiritual world, is Vishaka. Sometimes he's described as Arjuna, too. This is another question that people have. Sometimes they say, how can he be Arjuna and Vishaka? Isn't this a little rasabas, you know, improper combination of the rasas? Well, sometimes when people are considered to be incarnations, it's empowered. You understand? Now, I'm not commenting on his particular position. He's generally understood as Vishaka. But sometimes you hear people are combined incarnations of two different personalities. I remember in our movement, there was someone who Prabhupada said was the incarnation of book distribution. And then he still goes around telling people he's the incarnation of book distribution, but he's not distributing any Prabhupada's books anymore. So what I tell people is that he disincarnated. Because there's empowered incarnations and direct incarnations of the Lord, and I'm not going to get into the whole detail. But Ramananda Roy is considered to be Vishaka, and of course Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nayayanya, he's Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani. So you hear you see Krishnamurti Srimati Radharani, who is questioning Vishakha Devi. So it's a very interesting exchange. So as far as the topic being discussed today about Varnashram culture, Lord Chaitanya said, Srila Prabhupada, sorry. Srila Prabhupada said that Lord Chaitanya was nirupeksha. He wasn't interested in anything in this material world. So he kept asking for higher and higher and higher principles. And he didn't seem so interested in the Varnashram culture. Although, when people did violate in Varnashram culture, like in the case of Junya Haridas, he acted very strictly. Or when it came to the point when he was being asked to associate with Maharaj Prataparudra, he refused to do that. So he did show a very strict adherence to Varnashram culture. Although in this particular dialogue, it appears like he's rejecting it, which is interesting. But in his own personal life, very, very strict. I mean, he took sannyas, of course, and he never went back home. That's one of the things that's mentioned, that when one takes sannyas, one shouldn't go back to the place you were born in, because you have this natural attraction for that sort of thing. Is it for one's place of birth? I know, you know, I hate to admit it, but when I first got this Google Earth, the first thing I looked for was the place where I was born. You know, I zoomed in on the house. And then I thought, this is Maya. I'm supposed to be a sannyasi. I shouldn't be attached to the place where I was born. So one isn't supposed to see his wife from the previous Purva ashram, the previous ashram. One isn't supposed to see, to go to his home. Or one can see their mother. Lord Chaitanya, of course, did see his mother and listened to his mother's instructions, and that way he resided in Jagannath Puri. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a strict. He was as hard as a thunderbolt in his strictness as far as people following Varnashram Dharma. Although, in his discussion with Ramananda Roy, he pointed out it's not the highest, but it's something that's absolutely necessary. And so Srila Prabhupada said that we are interested in this world. When he was talking about Ramananda Roy's discussion with Lord Chaitanya, he said Lord Chaitanya was nirupeksha. Nirupeksha basically means disinterested. It means neutral. Sometimes devotees think that renunciation means to think negatively about this world. Like, oh, Maya. This is Maya. That is Maya. And in that way, you're actually thinking of the world even more when you think of Maya. Like, there's an interesting discussion between Prabhupada and Panchadevita Swami. Panchadevita Swami was talking about that whole story about Shakshi Gopal, where the younger Brahman, he brought the deity all the way from across India, the Shakshi Gopal deity. And the deity witnessed the older Brahman's promise to him that he would allow his daughter to marry him. And Prabhupada said he was a pure devotee. And then this disciple of Prabhupada, Panchadevita Swami, said to Prabhupada, if he was such a pure devotee, why would he want to get married? And then Prabhupada said, because no one would have you, you're saying this. So Prabhupada was indicating, of course it was a joking mood. And Panchadevita, he had a good sense of humor, maybe he still has a sense of humor, I don't know, Prabhupada does. And so Prabhupada was indicating, you know, if you're feeling like a negative emotion towards the material world, like I remember in the early days, you know, the brahmacharis, they would look at ladies and they'd say, Maya Devi. And they would, you know, sometimes even go so far as to spit when the woman walked by. Remember those days? You know, he was always on the transcendental platform, but I remember seeing it like that. And then, you know, that attraction and repulsion is felt by conditioned souls. And it's like opposite sides of the same coin. You know, heads or tails, you flip a coin. But it's the same thing. Whereas Lord Chaitanya, his attitude was neutral towards this material world. I mean, actually that was illustrated in the pastimes with Sanatana Goswami. When Sanatana Goswami had these running sores on his body, having gone through the Jarakanda forest and not adequately eaten or taken care of his health, because he was on his way to see Lord Chaitanya. Then he had all these sores that were oozing pus from his body. And Lord Chaitanya was embracing him. And Sanatana Goswami didn't like this at all. In fact, Sanatana Goswami at one point wanted to commit suicide by going under the wheel of Lord Jagannath's cart. Or he wanted to leave Jagannath Puri prematurely to go to Vrindavan. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said many things. I mean, one of the things he said in this regard about being Nirupecha, he said, if I considered your body to be abominable and other things to be nice in this world, I wouldn't be qualified as a sannyasi, I'm paraphrasing. Because a sannyasi is supposed to be neutral. You know, happiness and distress. That's one of the first things we learn in the Gita, isn't it? Sitoshna sukadukada gama payanam nitash comes to tiksha shabharata. Or other verses like pandita samadarshana. You know, what the learned sage sees a dog eater, brahman, everything equally. Of course, we do understand there is a difference between a dog and a brahman. It's not that we say, my dear brahman, will you do a fire sacrifice for me? Swaha, woof, 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 you know, like that. But as far as like attraction to things, whether it's something that's very beautiful or something that's very ugly, an actual person established in Krishna consciousness in this world will notice the difference, but he won't be repulsed or attracted. That's the difference. And if you're repulsed or attracted, that means you still got to work on your Krishna consciousness a little bit. Like, for example, I mean, let's example, the other day I was walking on the beach at our summer camp, and the sun was rising, and I was thinking, oh, how beautiful. And I developed this desire to enjoy. I said, oh, this is like heaven. And I forgot about my Krishna consciousness. And then an hour or two later, Krishna reminded me by showing me, you know, devotees were engaged in politics or whatever. And I said, oh, I can't stand this camp. So, get me out of here. So, isn't it? Happens sometimes. So, you know, caught between the sukha and the dukkha. And I wasn't exactly neutral. Why? Because I was attempting to enjoy this world. Actually, as much as you attempt to enjoy this world, that's as much as you'll suffer, too. So that's what I was thinking when I was enjoying the sunrise. I said, Krishna's going to smash me for this one. And he did. You know, so it's a sukha-dukha. So you really have to become neutral to everything. And yes, there is enjoyment. But the enjoyment is in your relationship with Krishna and Guru and service. And of course, when you advance further in devotional service, you enter into Krishna's pastimes, but that's something a little advanced for us. But there's this internal enjoyment that one gets from Krishna consciousness. And then the things of this world, like your conscious, like Prabhupada said, when you go up in an airplane, everything in the ground becomes very, very small in comparison. Insignificant. So when your consciousness is so absorbed in Krishna and his pastimes and your service and your devotion, then everything here, you know, pleasure and pain appear very insignificant in comparison. Sometimes I give that example. Some of the devotees have heard this before. That when I was young, we had an airplane. You know, a real airplane that you drive. And, you know, if my mother ever got angry with us, we just go up in the airplane and then she shrunk. What is that? Understand? She got smaller and smaller, insignificant, and didn't bother me anymore. You know, I shrunk the mother. Anyway, so that's Krishna consciousness. I mean, you go higher and higher and higher, and then, you know, sunrise, sunset, or it's raining, or it's too cold, it's too hot, or if your husband or wife yells at you, you're just Hare Krishna. You'll be happy. Of course, you should be in anxiety about your service to Krishna, but that's another subject matter. So that's really what nirupeksha means. Prabhupada said Lord Chaitanya was disinterested in this world, but Prabhupada said we are interested in this world, not to enjoy, but Prabhupada's objective is to establish a society. In fact, Prabhupada's objective is to change this world. to create a revolution in the misdirected lives of impious civilization. Tadvag visargo, janataga vipuvo. Yasmin pratisloka bhadavachupi. Namananantasha yashoni katanian. Shrinvanti gayanti grinanti sadava, right? That even, like Prabhupada was fond of quoting this verse because his first Bhagavatams, all the English wasn't exactly precise according to PhDs. And Prabhupada said, even if the words are imperfectly composed, they can create a revolution in the lives of an impious civilization. So Prabhupada was very, you know, transcendently greedy. He wanted to change the whole world, to change the whole universe. I mean, that's why we call him Jagat Guru. Like Prabhupada would sometimes criticize these Mayavadi sannyasis who call themselves Jagat Guru. Jagat means like universe. Guru of the universe. I mean, basically, they weren't even the guru of their senses. You know, Swami means controller, Goswami, controller of senses. They weren't even the guru of their senses. What to speak of their family, what to speak of their village, what to speak of their state or country, and what to speak of the universe. You know, they were not gurus at all. They were, what do you call, lagus. Instead of gurus, light. So, therefore, Prabhupada's intention was to really change the whole world, make the whole world Krishna conscious. And Prabhupada understood, actually there's several points I want to make here. When Prabhupada saw his disciples who had taken vows falling down, it sort of struck Prabhupada in the sense that, you know, showed Prabhupada that people in this Kali Yuga are not able to keep promises, even though truthfulness is sort of remaining in the beginning of Kali Yuga, it's quickly diminishing. Prabhupada was shocked when he saw the people weren't able to maintain their vows. Because Prabhupada came from a much higher culture where a promise is a promise. In our Western culture, if you make a promise and you cross your fingers, remember? Cross your fingers and hope to die. Anyways, if you cross your fingers, then it means you don't have to keep your promise. You can try that sometime. When you get initiated, just hold your hand. And just cross your fingers. I'm going to chant 60 years. Really? So, but you know, we don't consider, in fact, promises are made to be broken. There's that statement in English. And when people get married nowadays, they have this prenuptial agreement that when and if we get divorced, and we will, you get the dog and I get the house. You know, they have this whole agreement like that. It's prenuptial. I mean, before the marriage. So Prabhupada was shocked to see that in Western culture. And then Prabhupada saw that many of his disciples, they slipped away. And interesting, we had this discussion yesterday that generally Prabhupada would not reject a disciple who slipped away. I had this interesting discussion with Chandramali Maharaj on the boat yesterday. Because you have injunctions that, you know, if a disciple is fallen or whatever, you're supposed to reject him or else the guru and the disciple both go to hell, like that. So only, my remembrance is that only when someone was offensive to Prabhupada or Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur or the Acharyas or whatever, then Prabhupada would reject someone. I only remember like Jamadagni or something like that being rejected by Prabhupada. But Prabhupada, even if a devotee fell down, I remember Prabhupada welcoming him back and not rejecting the person. So Prabhupada was and is an ocean of compassion. And he always was welcoming people back. I mean, even with this Junior Haridas story, like Prabhupada didn't advocate that the sannyasis, if they had some trouble, would just like jump into the Triveni and commit suicide. Although one devotee did that, we think. But, you know, Prabhupada wanted to engage people in Krishna's service. He wasn't willing to neglect them or reject them. So Prabhupada, thinking about this, said, you know, that for one reason, Varnashram has to be instituted. In other words, people have to be engaged according to their propensities. And another reason, of course, is Prabhupada wanted to engage the whole world in Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada understood that you're not going to have the whole world chanting 16 rounds and following the four regulative principles. So therefore, you have to have a division of labor. And I was reading, actually 2 days ago, I was reading about Varnashram talks, Varnashram college talks that Prabhupada was having. And Prabhupada was talking about establishing a Varnashram college where people would be trained according to their Varna. In other words, the Brahmanas, they would be trained study and visionary things. The Kshatriyas would be trained not just in martial arts. I mean, that's a common misunderstanding, is that when people like to fight, they're Kshatriyas. It's not that like that. I mean, I remember there were sometimes you have these ladies who have children who like to fight with each other, and they say, "My child is a Kshatriya." But if you simply like to fight, you may be a Shudra. A Kshatriya's business, the Kshatriya means someone who protects someone from harm. Someone who's protective, who's managing. Like a manager who protects the people working under him from harm. Spiritual harm and material harm. Like Prabhupada defined violence as impeding someone's spiritual progress. It's interesting, that particular definition. Impeding a living entity's spiritual progress. So either you hurt them physically, or you hurt them by misleading them in spiritual life, then you're actually committing violence. So a Kshatriya was very, very careful. And also a Kshatriya would make sure that everybody's engaged according to their psychophysical nature in the Varnashram culture. And so Prabhupada wanted Kshatriyas trained up, Brahmins trained up. And interesting, they asked Prabhupada, should we train someone up in commerce? You know, how to cheat. And Prabhupada said, Prabhupada basically doesn't need training because we're not going to train someone on how to cheat. Because a Vaishya naturally, when he's engaged in commerce, has to say to someone, "For you, there's no profit." You know, because he buys something, it's very easy. You buy something at a low price and sell it at a high price. Nowadays they have business schools and everything like that. But it's basically, that's all it is. Isn't it? That's all it is. That's all business is. Learning how to bewilder and cheat people to make money. You know, somehow or other. And then, of course, most important thing for Vaishnavas, Krishi Gauraksha Vani Dham, Vaishya Karma Svabhavajan, right? Cow protection. You know, commerce and cow protection. And the commerce that traditionally a Vaishya would be engaged in would be trade. It wouldn't be that he'd be going on the stock market, right? And buying futures, or selling futures, I'm not going to tell you what that is. Or currency speculation, like some of you were engaged in the past, right? Currency speculation. Oh, we'll make a lot of money very, very quickly. And then you find that you've just lost 100,000 euros. And you lost your apartment, and you have to live in Tivoli Park after doing that. Not quite that bad. But, and then of course the Shudra is service to the others. So, Prabhupada really wanted this training in Varnashram. And Prabhupada said, even if we're Vaishnavas, still we act to set an example. In other words, let's say, of course I'm not a Vaishnava, but let's say Palatnanda Maharaj is a Vaishnava. And he's a sannyasi. And so, what does that mean to set an example? That he acts in terms of his varna and his ashram. You know, Brahman and Brahman sannyasi. In other words, he shouldn't go to work for Walmart or something like that. You know, Walmart? I don't know if you have Walmart here. No, you don't. Anyway, your local version of Walmart, whatever that is. You must have some big, big store where people buy things, everything comes from China. You know what I'm talking about. So, and you know, and we don't want to see Palatnanda Maharaj driving a taxi. Actually, I drove a taxi before I joined the movement. It's true. Before I joined the movement, and all the money I got from driving a taxi went to Krishna and Prabhupada. It's nice. So in other words, he sets an example. And I set an example, you know, because externally, whatever I am. And to teach others, yad yad acharati shrestas tatat ibetaro janaha. And Prabhupada also said that one of the main duties of the spiritual master is to engage the disciple according to the disciple's psychophysical nature. So we all have a particular psychophysical nature. So in our movement, the leaders should be guiding and facilitating people to serve according to their nature, not force them like a round peg in a square hole, a square peg in a round hole. They should be in thinking of the devotee's spiritual welfare so they can continue serving Krishna. Like Prabhupada talked about Gajendra the elephant. Gajendra the elephant was in the water outside of his natural constitutional position, which is on land, and therefore he was defeated by the crocodile. Of course, ultimately, Krishna saved him. So Prabhupada said we have to be situated in a position where we can continually serve Krishna for the rest of our lives in a stable way. So we all have to find our particular varna and ashram that we're comfortable in. Sometimes people ask me, how can I find my varna? It's actually quite easy. Think of that thing you can do. You can do many things, of course. For example, I'm a sannyasi. I can do many things. I know how to fix cars. I know how to do all sorts of stuff. But think of that thing you can do for 10 hours a day and not lose your mind. Something that really excites you. For example, in my life, it excites me to read Chaitanya Charitamrita. Like, every morning I'm doing my Didi Puja for my Giriraj. And I'm listening to, this morning I was listening to the Ramayana. It's ecstasy listening. Of course, I was hearing about Ravana. It wasn't so much ecstasy this morning. the portion I came to was Ravana kidnapped Sita. And you had to control myself while I was doing my Didi Puja. I was ready to smash the MP3 player, But anyway. I remember Prabhupada hearing about Shalva's airplane being smashed. Prabhupada was also getting into an interesting mode then. That's what I'd like to do. I can do a lot of things, but I'd love to hear Krishna Katha and preach and guide devotees and all that other nice stuff 10 hours a day. Other things, maybe about after 10 minutes, I just want to pull whatever hair I have out. It's just too frustrating. So you can figure out, what you can do all day long, and that's really your varna. If you could just go and do business all day long, sell things, go for it. Sell things for Krishna and give the profit to the sannyasis. Sorry. This class is being monitored. So anyway, so give it to the temple. I'm sorry. give it to the Krishna consciousness movement. So by all means, do that. And every man can become perfect by doing his prescribed duty. Arjuna was advised to do his prescribed duty. He thought, maybe I should take sannyas, renounce this prescribed duty. And Krishna said, you're going to be forced to fight anyway. So if he went to the woods, he'd be fighting with the animals or something. There's that story one time Arjuna was meditating. And as he was meditating, a big boar went to attack him. A big boar is not a boring person, but a big pig with tusks on it. just so you understand. So it went to attack him, and he took his arrow out and shot. At the same time, Lord Shiva, in the form of a karata, shot that boar. And then he just had a big fight with Lord Shiva over who shot the boar first. They were wrestling with each other and sparks were coming from their body. And basically he was defeated and realized it was Lord Shiva. Had a happy ending. But let's say, a Brahmin who's meditating, if someone shoots the boar and protects him, I just say thank you. Right? I wouldn't say, I shot him first! I said, thank you for protecting me. So Arjuna showed that by his nature, he was inclined to defense and fighting and protection and everything like that. So Krishna told him, just act according to your nature. So that's really the point about Varnashram. Act according to our nature. And as devotees, we need to set up this Varnashram, which Prabhupada considered to be part of his mission, which wasn't finished. In order to save the world, and in order to save the devotees too. Keep people stable year after year.
Like sometimes people ask, you know, all we have to do is chant 16 rounds, follow the four regular principles, go back to God. I said, yes, but can you do it for your whole life? That's the point. You know, will you be able to do it until you're 99 years old, ready to kick the bucket, you know, or die, as they say? And the only way you're going to be able to do it is if you're acting according to your psychophysical nature, because then your needs, your basic needs, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, basic needs need to be satisfied. You know, your psychophysical needs. Okay, so this is a little bit about Varnashram. I don't want to go forever because it's already late. Any questions or comments about anything? Maharaj, did you want to ask anything? Questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues? Yeah. Call it in. Yeah.
So there is already
some heaven. Well, it has to be understood basically holistically. What is a kshatriya? It's not simply martial arts. Although a kshatriya should be expert in martial arts, obviously he has to protect it that way. But it's really, you know, management, like strategy, planning. You know, when a kshatriya goes, first of all, when a kshatriya plans out a battle, he actually plans it out. It's not that he rushes out like with his gun shooting like Rambo or the Terminator. He rushes out, boom, 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 shooting in every direction, like the movies you see. He's really strategic. Just like nowadays in ISKCON, we have strategic planning. You know what that is? Vision statements, mission statements, strategic mission statements. You know, smart goals. I won't tell you what that is. But anyway, that's kshatriya. It's very much, because in the mode, I'll tell you something about the mode of passion. The mode of passion means you're planning things out for the future. In the mode of ignorance, you just like, be here now. That's a shudra. Do you understand what I mean? Mode, you know, some people may confuse the two. But in the mode of passion, it's a very deliberate strategy for something you want to achieve in the future. He who fails to plan, plans to fail. So a kshatriya, that's the first thing, the kshatriya mentality, and also protecting. The kshatriya feels very protective of the devotees and animals too. Or all living entities. I mean, a kshatriya considers all living entities, praja, who are born in his particular kingdom, to be just like his children. I mean, you see, in the case of Lord Ramchandra, he sent his wife away for the good of the kingdom. Because he was concerned, thinking everyone to be like his child. So he sacrificed his own happiness. So that's a kshatriya. Sacrifice his own happiness for those who he is in charge of. So it's a very high standard. It's not, you know, kshatriya is not just like your ordinary foot soldier. Kshatriya is like the general who actually does everything, you know, everything very, very intelligently. And he's also, you know, he's out there in the battlefield too. Like Prabhupada said, a bona fide king should be in front of his army fighting, not just he's behind in some bunker. You know, but you know what a bunker is? An underground thing. Operating some joysticks on a computer as the UAV. You know what a UAV is? As the drone bombs his enemy. Got him. Got like a video game. That's not a kshatriya. That's a shooter, a computer expert. But a kshatriya, you know, yes, martial arts are important, but that's really not the essence. That's just a side thing with a kshatriya. The main thing is the mentality, protection, dharma, sticking to dharma, worshiping the brahmanas, respecting the brahmanas, right? Giving charity to the brahmanas. And this is the essence of kshatriya dharma. So, yeah, but martial arts can be there. You know, kung fu, jujitsu, ninja. Just like in Serbia, we have an expert ninja, Vali Sadachar. I've seen him jump from 2 or 3 stories high and land on his feet and not get hurt. If I tried that, I'd be screaming all the way down and land the wrong way. Isn't it? Help, Krishna. Why didn't Krishna save me like he did Prahlad Maharaj? You know, I'm his devotee. So, you know, anyway, so the martial arts is important, but it really has to be an integrated approach with all the different aspects of Kshatriya Dharma. Don't separate one aspect. Yeah, I mean, I know how to fire a gun, but that doesn't make me a Kshatriya. Because when it comes time for a battle, I'll run away. Like that story of Karna. Karna didn't reveal to Parashuram that he was a Kshatriya. Because Parashuram, he didn't like Kshatriyas that much. You know, he had some issues with them. He killed them 21 times, 21 generations. Because Kartavirya Arjuna had killed his father. Anyway, his sons, Kartavirya Arjuna's sons, had killed his father, Jamadagni. So we had Karna who wanted to take instruction from Parashuram. So Karna didn't reveal that he was a Kshatriya. And then one day Karna was sitting there and Parashuram's head was on his lap and Parashuram was taking a nap. And this big monster bug or something, wow, starts to burrow his way into Karna's leg or thigh. And Karna just tolerates, I don't want to disturb my guru. He's resting. And so after a while, a drop of blood fell on Parashuram, and Parashuram said, where did this blood come from? He woke up, came back to external consciousness. And Karna said, this is what's happened, look at my leg. And Parashuram immediately understood that Karna was a Kshatriya. The Kshatriyas, they can tolerate. I mean, you hear about Kshatriyas being filled with arrows and going and continue to fight. And you get one, I get one scratch and I'm crying for my mother. Not really, not that bad. But I mean, let's say 2 days ago, I was swimming in the Adriatic and I scratched myself on a rock and it's just like, oh my God, it's scratched. I better put some tea tree oil on it and do this on it. I don't want to get infected. But a Kshatriya, it's sometimes described that he's covered with arrows like a porcupine. You know what a porcupine is? Like these animals that have little spikes all over their body. And he goes on fighting. Grandfather Bhishma had so many arrows in him, you couldn't even put a finger between the arrows. And he was still charging at Arjuna. Can any of you do that?
We haven't tried.
What?
We haven't tried.
Yeah, and I ain't trying. I'm gonna be like a peaceful Brahmin, just like shanti, peace, love. but a Kshatriya, I mean, that's a Kshatriya. So you can give it a test. You just start sticking some pins in them. Even better, send them to the dentist. And video them as the dentist is taking his drill. On the teeth and see what happens. So that's a Kshatriya. That's a Kshatriya. So, and then, and Vaishya, of course, is something different. So you tell by the modes of nature, really. A Brahmana is in the mode of goodness, Kshatriya in the mode of passion, Vaishya in the mode of mixed modes of passion and ignorance, and Shudra in the mode of ignorance. So a Shudra you don't give money to, because as soon as you give money to a Shudra, he's out at the bar smoking marijuana. Right? I mean, it just goes right through his pocket immediately. He has you understand, a hole in the pocket? A hole in the pocket. That means it gets money, it goes out the same day. And I know in Fiji, one of the places I live, there's certain people there, I'm not mentioning who they are because I don't want to be racist, but certain people they can't keep money for more than a day. And that means it's Shudra. So Shudra is provided naturally, according to the Varnashram system, what? With clothes, with food, a place to live, like that. And Shudra, practically the only samskara they have is marriage. Other than that, no other samskaras for them. But the Kshatriya, Vaishya, and the Brahman, they're also Dvija, they're twice born. They also accept a spiritual master. Any other questions or comments? Yeah.
I was just wondering, many times already, I think the Kshatriyas are the only ones, I don't see what they would do as a devotee in this world. I mean, Brahmanas can preach, Vaishnavas can sell things.
I just get that. Well, like Prabhupada said, we say chant Hare Krishna. If you don't chant Hare Krishna, you blow your brain. No, I'm just joking about that. The Kshatriya manages, protects. Like I said, in this country we need strategic planning. We need management in the temples. I mean, all this is important. So yeah, management, like Prabhupada said, you know, man, we need management so our movement will continue. We're talking with Giriraj Maharaj. Not simply, you know, being Krishna conscious up there in the stratosphere. But we need good management, intelligence and management. We need. So that's, a Kshatriya is very intelligent. We need so many Kshatriyas to manage our society. And, there's a great need for Kshatriyas. We have no management. But if someone is brahminically inclined, you know, and tries to manage too much, he gets headache. Although Brahman can manage. But a Brahman, in general, shouldn't be fighting. A Brahman can teach how to fight. That's interesting. Brahman can teach many different subject matters. Like Prabhupada even said, Varnashram College, the teachers could be sannyasis, which is interesting. So, you know, the sannyasi can teach. I'm not going to teach business, but no way. No way. It's in my family, but I'm not going to teach it. So a sannyasi can teach different things, the management skills and everything. But for a sannyasi to engage in fighting, I mean, it's really not appropriate. You know, for a sannyasi, I mean, like, or a Brahmin. Like you have Drona and Kripa, who are fighting on the wrong side of the battle of Kurukshetra, and Prabhupada said that's because their consciousness is contaminated by eating food cooked in the kitchen of Duryodhana's kitchen. But obviously, they can teach how to fight, but they shouldn't have been fighting. Especially against the good guys. Alright, any other questions? Because it's time for prasadam. I don't want to keep everybody from their dharma. Varnashram Dharma, Prasadam Dharma. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaura Prabhupada, Hare Hare Gaura.